good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut. He didn't cut a game.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kutagi, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local and national Native news and events, and as you know, Chujunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. And this portion of the show is supported by Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon. Thank you, Pinagigi, all who help keep our show up and running.
Absolutely. And to all our sponsors out there, too, if you ever see anybody that sponsors this show, give them a big thank you and maybe a big ceremonial hug. And we really appreciate all the people that have supported us over the years. Hey, we have Dr. Stately here, who is the president and executive officer of Native American Community Clinic. And I want to wish Dr. Stately a happy Earth Day. Ho-wa!
Ho-wa! Happy Earth Day to you as well.
Right on. Well, Chujunk, how do we say that in Ho-Chunk?
Oh, yeah. No, I looked this up. So this actually means we belong to the earth, and we would say it, hey, menegi, hey, de da.
Nice. That's beautiful. That's, again, nice. Another t-shirt we need to rip out here before the state fair and
right.
Shakopee's yeah. Powwow.
Right.
Yeah. Hey. That sounds like a good t-shirt. Yeah. Like, yeah.
If people got to learn how to say it.
Right. Sort of, not really. As long as we have the English translation.
That's true.
That's true. Definitely true.
It's way better than my t-shirt. My idea for my t-shirt.
Well,
what was that?
I can't tell you because then Rob, this one will steal it.
Yeah, copyright that.
Well, if you do say it here and we don't destroy the show, you'll have proof that you said it here. But okay.
That's true. Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, that's good old, what do you call it, trademark lawsuit.
Yeah.
Right.
So I just got back from New York, and there was turbulence, Dr. Stately, and I don't know if I'm just getting old, but I needed to find a bag just in case, and that's never really happened to me before.
Really?
I'm a good flyer.
You, was it turbulence, or was it like were you like, were you being tossed around in the plane, or did you just all of a sudden kind of drop a few feet?
It was just a little turbulence, and then the plane had to go around and fly into a different runway because of the wind was so bad. But I have never experienced that, and I must be getting old because I had an upset. I was getting dizzy. I was like, my mouth was watering, all those bad things that happened before. And I can't remember. I think the last time I got sick was like, I don't know, before I quit drinking. So it had to be like 40 years.
Whoa, that's a while.
Yeah, well.
The earth must have wanted you back on the ground or something.
You're 26, so that is a long time. But for me, it was like, it seems like last week. So I don't know. You've been flying around a lot. Have you experienced that lately?
Me? No. I mean, I don't. Yeah. I am. I don't. I think I've only really had one flight where I was a little bit terrified for my life. It was a few years ago. I had the experience once not too long ago where I was on a plane and it, like, you know, we hit air pocket, and sometimes you can hit big air pockets and then the plane just kind of drops down and you can feel it. Like, it's like being on one of those carnival rides where your stomach is left up there and you're down here.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Is it my old age that's catching up to me or what?
It's possibly the fact that you're old.
I mean, you know,
we can blame a lot of things. We can actually attribute a lot of things to your old age.
I've always mispronounced names, though.
Global warming.
Yeah. Well, I've always mispronounced names, so I'm good on that. So I don't have early onset, but I wouldn't remember if I could, if I did. So there's that, too.
Yeah, that's the nature of early onset, that you wouldn't remember that you couldn't remember.
I know.
Anyway, this is a radio show. We're talking about health issues in general, not diagnosing you, so we'll move on. But
Exactly. Thank you. Thank you for steering the ship correctly here. Okay. These weekends.
It was an awesome even Earth Day. We had Earth Day stuff at NAC today.
Nice.
So we do something every year where we do we did a smudge walk. I didn't join the smudge walk today because I was in back-to-back meetings. But so we have our street outreach team and some staff and anybody else that kind of wants to join. We have a smudge walk where we walk around the neighborhood and we do a smudge walk. And then we also are picking up, garbage and needles and doing the thing, right? Doing our part to take better care of the earth. And then inside the clinic, we do things we had seed, you could plant yourself a little plant and take it home. Those kinds of things.
Wow. So, that's very cool. I know Haley was with. I know Haley was with this last weekend helping out with Maggie Lorenz's group.
Yeah, Wakanti Bia Wanyan Kapi in St. Paul. We were out there cleaning up the Indian mound Saturday morning, and it was a great time. There was a lot of people that showed up. We were filling bags of trash and recycling. So got to get back out there and do it again because those sites are so sacred. Those at Mounds Park and that whole area.
And Dr. Stately, Haley almost lost her thumb. Show Dr. Stately.
Oh yeah, I was being a very good citizen, picking up broken glass. It's a little baby cut. Thank you, Dega, for
wow. Yeah. It would be like if you had lost your thumb there, it would be like your offering to the ancestors.
Yeah. I did throw down some handfuls of tobacco.
But good. No blood. The blood of our ancestors.
No blood. Tobacco's no thumb. Yeah, it's good idea. So I did some yard work yesterday on Sunday, and holy man, I felt all my years this morning when I woke up, my back was tight. And I cleaned out my shed, which, had not been cleaned since I moved into the house almost 4 years ago. So, there was that. And then,
And that's really interesting because I don't know, Haley, have you ever been invited over to Dr. Stately's house? Because I haven't.
I have. I'm waiting for that invite to come in the mail. I would love to come help you organize Dr. Stately.
Oh, Haley.
Oh, shut up. Okay.
Well, consider it an open invitation this weekend. So I have a lot to do. We got to clean the beds and.
Oh, the beds. Okay.
Pull out all, not the beds and the leaves. The beds in the garden, about all the leaves, and so I had a couple workers, helping me with this task, and I went to go grocery shopping because I also hadn't gone all week last week, a really busy week. The week before that, I remember I was on travel, so I was my kids are you have to go buy some groceries. We're hungry. We're starving. We have nothing to eat. And I was they're a typical Native kid. They open the fridge, and if something doesn't jump out at them and present themselves as here, eat me, they think there's nothing to eat. So I had to go buy them some things that they could cook on their own, taquitos and stuff like that. But
we bought a freezer downstairs during COVID, just in case the world ran out of food, we'd still have some freezer. But I'd go down there and I'd tell Wendy we don't have any bread, and then she'd go down there and find it. So I have stories too. Hey, we're here with Dr. Stately, and we're celebrating Earth Day with all our listeners here and talking about a lot of fun stuff. We'll be right back after this short break.
Stay with us.
When we heal from our traumas,
when we face our fears,
let go of our addictions.
When we relearn our values.
When we live our teachings.
Respecting our elders.
Cherishing and honoring our children.
When we honor and take care of our spirit.
There will be no room left for sexual violence.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Signing up for $1 bus and train rides with the Transit Assistance Program, or TAP, is quick and easy. Do it straight from your computer or phone by uploading one of the pre-approved documents listed at metrotransit.org/TAP along with a copy of your ID. We'll mail you a go-to card with a full year of discounted rides. For questions or translation help, call 612-373-3333. That's 612-373-3333.
As we gear up for American Indian Celebration Month in May, it's crucial to prioritize our health, especially with celebrations on the horizon. If you start feeling off, like a fever, a tickle in the throat, or heavy fatigue, don't ignore it. Take an at-home COVID-19 test right away. And remember, if you're not feeling well, it's okay to stay home. Your health comes first. A quick note on COVID testing. The Minnesota Department of Health's free COVID-19 at-home testing program has ended. But don't worry. If you're uninsured, you can still find no-cost tests using the CDC's COVID-19 testing locator. If you have health insurance, you might be eligible for free tests or reimbursement for testing expenses. Just ask your local pharmacy or health insurance provider for more information. Stay informed. Stay protected. Let's prioritize our health this American Indian Celebration Month in May and ensure our communities and elders remain safe and healthy. This message is brought to you in partnership with the Minnesota Department of Health. Visit health.state.mn.us.
This is Leonard Peltier. I am in Coleman 1 U.S. Penitentiary, and I'm listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Clinic, or NAC, in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Oh, I love that tagline, Dr. Stately. Did you come up with that? We're here with Dr. Stately, the CEO and President, Executive Officer of Native American Community Clinic here in the Twin Cities, Minnesota, and I really always like to hear that tagline. Did you come up with that?
I don't think it was me that came up with it. I think it might have been like in a conversation with Ashley John, who's now our traditional healing program manager. But at the time, she was working as our operations manager, and also like she's kind of in charge of all of our media stuff.
Cool.
We're talking a little bit about like rebranding, not rebranding, but like, you know, we have this big, huge, long mission statement in our bylaws and the organizational structure, like when we first started. And I was like, that is a really long mission statement. Like, we got to find a way to distill all that into like one, you know, simple statement that people remember. So I think she kind of distilled it and came up with that, and we all loved it, so we adopted it. So.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. We haven't talked about this in a long time, but I know specifically you are so busy, meaning your staff and what's going on. Maybe you can remind our listening audience what really you guys do. You're right in the middle of the Native Corridor. People come to you all over the state, basically, for services. Maybe talk a little bit about that to remind our listeners, we haven't talked about in a long time, what you do.
Sure. So, like, you know, we're a federally qualified healthcare center, which is a community health center. We provide comprehensive care to the Native urban community here in the Twin Cities. The majority of our patients, so somewhere around 60-65% of our patients come from like a maybe a mile to a 2 miles from radius from the clinic. Many of them come from Little Earth and the sort of like the East Phillips neighborhood, you know, all the way up into South Minneapolis. And we have a bunch of patient relatives that actually come from the Northeast as well. But we have, you know, we do have some patients that come all the way down from up north, the reservation communities, many from White Earth and Red Lake, some from Cass Lake, and then folks in Bemidji. Like, a lot of people will come down here from Bemidji rather than going to like one of their clinics or the hospitals within Bemidji. They'll come down, especially if they've already established care. Like, one of the things that's the nature of our relatives is that we move between the cities and our homelands and the reservations of our families. We have to go back for all kinds of reasons, right? We saw a lot of people go back for during COVID when they couldn't afford housing. There was all these mm-hmm. kinds of things. So if they establish care and they have a relationship with our provider and our clinic, they oftentimes come back for, really critical or even just chronic care. They come back for that specifically, which is great. So, we love to see our relatives come back and get care when they need it. It's always good to see people, even if we haven't seen them for months.
Yeah.
But that was like, so we do, we have pediatric care, we have immunizations, all kinds of preventative care, all the from cradle to grave, basically. But we also deliver behavioral health and mental health services to the community. We have a tribal partnership with Red Lake where we do, we have a intensive outpatient treatment program for people struggling with substance use disorder that we run in a partnership with the Red Lake Nation. That's been going on since 2018. And around the same time, we also opened up a medication administration program for our relatives that live in and around the Twin Cities to provide Suboxone to people who are struggling with opiate use disorder. And at the same, and we also have a street outreach team that does a lot of work with infectious disease identification. One of the things that happened as a result of the pandemic and also as a result specifically of opiate use disorder, especially for people who are injecting drugs, is the proliferation of HIV and hepatitis C. We started seeing an uptick in those conditions back in 2018. And a lot of people don't know this, but the Twin Cities specifically, and then there's another little pocket to the north, kind of in and around the Duluth area. But Hennepin County, Ramsey County, and St. Louis County have been sort of like, at the center of like the largest outbreaks of HIV and from IV drug use, and the preponderance of that has been among Native peoples over much more than other people, non-Native people, and then also among our unsheltered relatives.
Yeah.
So over the last 5 years, we built out an infectious disease program, which includes the ability to have folks in our harm reduction and street outreach team that can do things like test people and pop up events and go into encampments and find people and get them tested regularly so that we can get them into care. One of the things that's important to know about HIV is the sooner we can identify you as and help you find out if you have HIV, we can get you into care as quickly as possible. We have drugs now that can manage that so significantly, so people can live with HIV as chronic disease for decades.
Yeah,
I don't talk about this a whole lot publicly, but I've been living with HIV for about 30 years, and I take one pill a day. I've been doing that for several years, and I'm what they call undetectable. So when you knock your viral load down to an undetectable amount, it essentially prevents you from being able to transmit that virus to someone else. So there's that work we do in the harm reduction and the street outreach team, and all of that work is all around trying to protect our community from getting from any more harms that could possibly happen to folks, from everything from overdosing to infectious disease to, keeping people from, having access to, or preventing people from being harmed by needles and those kinds of things. So, and then we do a whole bunch of other things. We provide tents to people who are living outdoors. We give them socks, we give them shoes, we give them all the kinds of things that they would need to be able to be safe. So,
Well, how many, you know, I don't think I've ever asked you this, but how big a staff do you have?
Right now we have 105 employees.
Wow. Wow. And back to the HIV, I know Wendy is a former pharmacist at the University of Minnesota. And, you know, a lot of the times, too, if our relatives are homeless, it's hard to keep up the regimen. And I remember, if you're talking about 30 years ago, shoot, there was a cocktail that destroyed your stomach back then, and now it's down to, like, one pill.
Yeah, so, like, 30 years ago when I first got diagnosed with HIV and I didn't start taking medications, I think until I was probably about 4 or 5 years in. And well, I mean, I'm going way, way back. I think the first drug I took for HIV was AZT, which was just completely, if a lot of people have been around for a while or they've had HIV, it was a pill that you had to, it was like a big wafer. It looked like a communion wafer, but thicker. And it was nasty. You had to put it in your mouth and chew it up, and then it starts to fizz up. And it was like, jeez. I can't imagine anything worse than the taste of that thing. It was like, it was basically a taste metallic, like, which I hate. I'm just thinking, oh, I'm eating all kinds of chemicals, So over the years that solution got better, it got easier, and thankfully in 2009 when I finally got, no, not 2009, I would say 1999 rather, I got on a regimen that allowed me to take one pill that was a compound of 3 or 4 different HIV drugs that was easier to swallow, and I didn't have to do it multiple times a day. I wasn't homeless at the time. I was a student in grad school or just getting out of grad school. And that was challenging to figure out how to take all those medications at once. Wow. We also used to have to do the same thing for to treat hepatitis C. Used to be interferon, right? People would have to go in and get a shot or do IV interferon through IV. Today we have so many different technologies and so much better technologies to help people manage those diseases that they are survivable and they're chronic, and you can take care of them for a while. I think the biggest challenge we have with some of these things, specifically with HCV, hepatitis C, is liver, the damage to liver, to your liver, and the propensity for us to develop things like liver cancer and things.
Did I understand right that the reason why the COVID vaccine came out so fast is that it was kind of related to the vaccine used in HIV?
The vaccines and the vaccine technology that we have today has been built off all of the 20, 30 years of science that we developed treating HIV.
Yeah.
So the technology. So that's the reason that the vaccine was so easy to develop in a very short period of time. Over the last 20, 30 years, we had developed the technology to understand how RNA and mRNA work to sort of identify a specific part of a gene or your DNA to sort of target a specific protein or an action. Like most of the HIV drugs today, they're called protease inhibitors. So they act at the place in which the protein binds to the cell and prevents transmission. So,
hey, we're here with Dr. Stately, and we'll be right back. This is Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950.
J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
Doherty Family College at the University of St. Thomas is your pathway to a bachelor's degree. Located in downtown Minneapolis, Doherty Family College offers an affordable education that includes free textbooks, a laptop, meals, career coaches, and a Metro Transit pass. As a full-time Doherty Family College student, you'll benefit from mentorship from St. Thomas faculty, along with paid internships and support from Minnesota's largest private college. Ready to turn your dreams into reality? Apply now at dfc.stthomas.edu. Doherty Family College, your journey to success starts here.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States.
And 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected.
Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf.
Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy.
As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired.
Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Some people won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Aneen, I'm with Peggy Flanagan, and you are listening to Native Roots Radio.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, we are here with Dr. Stately, CEO of Native American Community Clinic here in Minnesota and the Twin Cities. We're kind of just talking a little bit about the clinic and a little history of vaccines. And it's always good to just slow down and kind of think about these things. I just, when I think about when HIV first came out, people dying of this, when I think of COVID first coming out, people dying of this, people have a short memory. And I think it's really good to talk about this because this was heavy duty, and I was young when this came out, HIV.
Yeah. Well, I think I was 25 when I landed it in Los Angeles, California. I left here, Minnesota, kind of all kinds of reasons why I ran from here, but I ran away from here to get away from things as much as I was running towards something. So like a bag there. But I landed in California, in Los Angeles, in February. So it would have been February of 1986. I had gotten sober in October of 85. And 4 months later, I was at the end of October. 4 months later, I was living in Los Angeles and, it was kind of like, I had, at that time in my life, I had heard about this thing, the gay cancer, but it was like, I was so far away from it, like here in the Twin Cities. It was stuff that was happening on the coast, lots of stories about, it impacting primarily gay men, white gay men at the time in San Francisco and in New York. And, my headspace was like, well, I'm Native, I'm not white, and so I'll probably be okay. That's just kind of like some of the things we've learned over the last several decades is the way we talk in public health about these kinds of things, these conditions, being really aware now of like how we describe like the condition and how it relates to who it most impacts, right? We had a whole couple of years, a good long decade of HIV in our communities and ravaging really disenfranchised and marginalized communities like black communities and and stuff before we realize like it's a disease that really doesn't see race. It's like COVID. COVID was like, COVID could care less if you were black, white, orange, purple, green. Didn't like there's these things, these organisms don't have any sort of like
prejudice.
Ideas or prejudice. They just don't like. First of all, like race is a manufactured thing that humans created. Right. Organisms don't care about that. But the way in which the communities that were most impacted were being impacted was policy and decisions that were being driven by sort of like structural racism that locked people out of opportunities to get access to healthcare. Right.
Right.
I didn't realize this at the time, but like as I'm living in California and I'm doing things like participating in die-ins, as we used to do the thing with ACT UP, and ACT mm-hmm. UP was like a huge movement that started to sort of put pressure on President Reagan to like start talking about AIDS and start putting money into that and those things. And we would do things like we'd lay in the concrete and we'd spray paint the outline of our bodies, and we'd to demonstrate like, well, there's no action on a policy level and you're not talking about this publicly and you're not warning people about how it can actually happen and get infected. People are actually dying at record numbers. Right. So I landed in LA at a very young age, 25 years old. There were a lot of, the context of my life at that time was I was newly sober, didn't really have a good sense of who I was in the world. young man who didn't have any money because I landed there with $100 in my pocket. No place to live. And, back in the day, you could kind of do that. You can go to California with no money and a backpack and figure some things out. I don't think you could do that these days.
Mm-hmm.
And so the context of my life was different, but a lot of the things that placed me at the greatest risk for becoming HIV were all structural level things, right? Like the lack of, I didn't have health insurance for like the first several years I lived there. Right.
Right.
And so I think, I've lived through all those things. And so when I saw those things happening in the pandemic, over the last few years, when I was as the executive officer of this organization that serves Indigenous people, and we have some of the worst health outcomes in the state, if not the nation, it became really clear to me, like I was able to see the structural things because I had experienced those things myself. And I had seen, the challenges that we were up against, right? And, the difference between HIV and the difference between the more recent pandemic is that, we had newer technology. We had people who were really invested in trying to find a solution. And we had 30, 40 years of living through an experience and understanding what happens when there's no action, there's inaction. Right. So,
well, if you remember, and I might be speaking out of turn, but I don't think Reagan did anything until Rock Hudson said that he had HIV and died like less than a month later, and he was good friends with Rock Hudson.
Yeah, well, they came from the same era of Hollywood, royalty, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember like when I was younger, people being like, "Oh my God, Rock Hudson! I thought he loved Doris Day." Like, well, every gay man I know loves Doris Day.
Right.
What's not to love about her? Okay, sarah, sarah. But I think the other thing was that, like, if you think about it, Reagan had gone, he was in office for 8 years, right? So he had gone like almost 8 years without ever saying the word AIDS.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Wow.
And we are so far along with our technology and our ability to fight it. It's not that it's not to say that it isn't a thing still. Like, I think people also like here's the other danger we are always in as human beings. We are organisms that like comfort,
mm-hmm.
right? We don't want to be disrupted by anything. I mean, that's what was the biggest challenge of the pandemic, right? that we just went through is like people didn't want to be uncomfortable. They didn't like, you know, what do you mean I can't DoorDash food anymore? What do you mean I can't go in and get my hamburger or my this or my that, whenever I want it? Like, we're so used to having the things that we want and being mm-hmm. able to have an answer to that right away. Like this moment, we are a society that is not just this nation. This nation has a lot of challenges, but I think globally we're used to just getting things immediately. Mm-hmm. And so being uncomfortable, being challenged, being, having to sort of like figure out how to struggle is something we have forgot to do because we live in a different age of technology. Right. Not just Facebook and all those other things. We live in a different age of medical technology, the ability to sort of kind of respond to something much bigger. So we forget things like, if unless we're paying attention to the other things structurally that actually keep people from getting access to things. Like, I have these conversations all the time with some of my colleagues that are other people in healthcare, big systems, right, who say like, well, you know, access shouldn't be a thing anymore. I'm like, well, what we learned from the pandemic actually is that access is a really big thing. It's right. More than access is more than just having like a door open or a door to walk through. Some people mm-hmm. have more challenges walking through that door. Right. And then once you get through the door, you have to actually also be able to consume the services or to get the services provided to you in a way that is meaningful to you culturally, linguistically, all of these things. So we continue to struggle with that as a society.
Right.
And that's the bigger part that makes my job really hard sometimes.
Well, and all the changes too, and it just in the last 20 years of just everything, and it's very subtle and it's very quick. I mean, there's things like Haley has never had to deal with. She's never had to pick a yeah. phone off the wall and keep it off the hook.
And do this.
Yeah, the dial back and forth.
And then how they blocked people back then was they just took the phone, or we did. We just took the phone off the hook. Oh.
Yeah, and remember how frustrating it was if you're like doing the dial thing and you stuck your finger in the 3 hole and you meant to do the 4? You just like hang up and start all over again.
Oh. Yeah. I can't even imagine that. Well,
do you remember party lines? Because I remember party lines very, very young. We'd pick up the phone and there'd be somebody else on the phone. And my mom would yell at
this, I think, go still ahead, exists to some degree, but I don't think they're used for the ways in which you and I used to use them.
What were you going to say, Haley?
I was just going to say, mentioning, like, I didn't know about the Ronald Reagan thing and him not talking about AIDS and HIV. And honestly, the only things like that I've learned about those things are from the Matthew McConaughey movie, Dallas Buyers Club.
Oh, wow.
And, you know,
that was a great movie. I learned so much from that movie. Because that was a great movie because that was a real thing. It was based on a true story that actually happened. Like, a group of people had to come together and figure out how to get the medication to their community. And so in some ways, I think about how that relates to the current conditions that we have now in our community and not nationwide in terms of Native people. I don't think a lot of people know this, but like, you know, when we went through this process recently where we drilled down with some of our research partners to look at like county level data around the impact of opiates and overdoses, fatal and non-fatal at the county level. In Minnesota, specifically within South Minneapolis, and I think there's also like 3 areas kind of to the northwest, like near and the counties that White Earth and Red Lake probably inhabit, or Buttress are centered in there. We have the highest rates of opiate overdoses among Native people anywhere in the entire nation, right here in Minnesota.
Oh my God.
Right. And so, and a lot of that has to do with access to life-saving drugs, right? How hard it is to get the buprenorphine. People are like, well, it's a drug that's available. You can get it from any prescription or any pharmacy. You can just walk in any place and get it. Well, that's not true for everybody.
Right. Hey, Dr. Stately, can you hold on for just one more quick segment?
Sure.
Right on.
Are we howling next? We're howling next. Yeah.
Aren't we? Yes, we are. And we got you for another segment, even though it's not in your contract. Hey, we'll be right back with Dr. Stately's Native Roots Radio for Since I'm Awake.
Signing up for $1 bus and train rides with the Transit Assistance Program or TAP is quick and easy. Do it straight from your computer or phone by uploading one of the pre-approved documents listed at metrotransit.org/TAP along with a copy of your ID. We'll mail you a go-to card with a full year of discounted rides. For questions or translation help, call 612-373-3333. That's 612-373-3333.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950. Attention, Native American community. As we prepare for American Indian Celebration Month in Minnesota this May, it's essential to prioritize the health and safety of our communities. With social gatherings and festivities on the horizon, getting vaccinated against COVID-19 is crucial. So let's make getting vaccinated a tradition, inclusive, and cross-generational. Imagine gatherings filled with shared stories and cultural celebrations free from the shadow of COVID-19. Remember, protecting yourself and others is what counts. Whether it's time for an updated vaccine or your first shot, all COVID-19 vaccines offer protection, with the latest vaccine especially recommended for our elders over 65. As we gather with friends and relatives this May for American Indian Celebration Month, let's ensure everyone's safety by getting vaccinated. Together, we can uphold our traditions and keep our communities thriving. For more information, including details about clinics offering free vaccines, visit vaccines.gov. This message is brought to you in partnership with the Minnesota Department of Health.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
How?
How? I'm just looking at the little video. The dog, he looks like, or the wolf, he looks like he takes another little, like, short howl. So I always feel compelled to,
you know,
lip sync for him.
We were, other than talking about how great your clinic is and a little information about your clinic, we were kind of a little dark there. And I want to give a chance for you, Dr. Stately, to talk about the resilience of Native Americans and celebrate the brilliance and resilience, as I'm going to put on a shirt here soon.
That's a good one, too.
I just stole it from Dr. Stately. I'll admit that one.
Wow. We really do have to revisit the GD contract there.
The GD.
I think when we talk about these things, and we talk about the pandemic, we talk about like the scale of that, and these are real things, these are true things. Like, you know, we are losing so many in our community at such a fast and escalating rate. It's really scary. While that is true, we are also like one of the, you know, I think one of our defining features as Indigenous people, that we are like, we are resilient, we are brilliant, we have just tremendous capacity for for reimagining and remaking ourselves over and over and over and over again, right? And I think about, like, you know, we're 1 week away from, well, tomorrow it's 1 week, right? So tomorrow is 1 week from May 1st. So next Wednesday, we will be having the kickoff day for Indian Month here in Minnesota. Really amazing opportunity for, like, we'll have a parade that goes through South Minneapolis. We'll go past the clinic here, and then we get to the Indian Center, and then, you know, historically, I was just like thinking, I was in a meeting earlier with Mary Lagarde, who's the executive director of the Indian Center. And, you know, they're opening up the Indian Center after on next Wednesday. Wow. On May 1st, as part of Indian Month. And they're going to, you know, we used to march past the Indian Center. Well, next Wednesday, we're going to go on a march, and we're going to stop at the Indian Center and go in and see the amazing new space, which will be really amazing, right? And I think about, like, you know, where we are as a community in some real ways, and I think mainly specifically within sort of the where we're at with in terms of like the failed policies that have been implemented over the last 40 or 50 years as it relates to, you know, child welfare, health policy, drug policy, you know, incarceration, you know, police violence, all these things. We have some big things that we still have to contend with as a community, because the scale of the impact of those things in our community is large. It's big. And those things are real. And so we're facing some real headwinds here.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we've been facing those for a really long time. And while that is true, and we've just been through a worldwide pandemic that has really had a big impact on our collective mortality, like the lifespan of Native people has slid down significantly post-pandemic. I think the obese disorder situation has contributed to that as well. One of the things that's true is that is true. And what is also true is we are strong, we are resilient, we are brilliant people.
Right.
And we have the ability to keep remaking and reimagining ourselves. And I think we're feeling a real sense of a renaissance in our community, something that I remember feeling in the early 70s when I was a young boy and I was 11 years old and I was there at the Indian Center the day it opened up. So I'm really excited about this next week. I'm excited to see what I'm able to look at. I'm also, more importantly, I'm excited to be among like my relatives in the Twin Cities area that are going to be there all being in one place and being rejoiceful about the fact that we, you know, once again, like a phoenix from, you know, we rose up through the fire and we sort of kind of pulled ourselves out of something and we still are moving forward. And I think that's the important part of what we have to remind ourselves, is that Creator gave us all the tools, all the original instructions for us to face anything, any adversity that has confronted us since the beginning of time. We have all the tools that we need. A lot of those are in our ceremonies and our songs and our rituals and our traditions, the things that have sustained us since the beginning of time. When we show up with those things, we always have. We emerge stronger and better relatives to one another and to the rest of the planet. I think that's the direction we're moving in. I'm excited about it.
Yeah. Wow. Good words. Really good words. And sometimes we have to take a deep breath and realize those things that you just spoke of, too, because it's sometimes we're right in the middle of the fire and it's hard to see around how far we've come.
We can get swallowed up by the pain and the grief of loss and all of the tragedy and forget to see the beauty. That's the nature of like... One of the things I remember when I was, you know, I was not a very good boarding school kid, like, you know, and I wasn't a very good Christian because I would always like question everything, right? You know, I'd be like, why this, why that kind of thing. So, but what made sense for me as a young man is when I started sort of kind of like reading, like when I read like God is Red and all these amazing books that people had written in the early Renaissance of the late 60s and early 70s, and I started to understand that's a great book, everybody should read it. I began to understand like the core of our philosophy as Indigenous people, that like, you know, life isn't good and bad, life is both good and bad. It isn't good or bad, it's both. Both of those things live together, right? And it isn't, and our paths from the moment we get here to the moment we leave is, as a good relative, is to show up and make life more meaningful and joyful and with a sense of gratitude. Every day we wake up, it's a day that we, you know, is a day that is given to us by Creator. No one has promised tomorrow. We've got to live this day today to the fullest and with the best, and show up and be the best relative to everybody we encounter. And if we do that, you'll be able to value you'll see the pain and all of the grief and all the things, but you'll also be able to extract from that the value and the ability to appreciate life more fully, because you can't understand the full extent of the value of life today if you don't also understand loss. Those two things are inextricably linked together.
Yeah. Well, you know, my recovery path, I always like to be kind of fun and say every day's a gift. That's why they call it the present. And I do believe that. It might be kind of a fun little thing, but I do believe that. And it's helped me in so many ways. Dr. Stately, thank you so much for spending today with us and our listeners all across Turtle Island. I know we've been at some public events through the station, and your name comes up quite frequently. And I just want to say a big peenie-geegee thank you so much for spending time with us.
It's my honor, privilege.
Hey, we're still here. We are the seventh generation.
And free Leonard Peltier.
See you tomorrow. Native Roots Radio.
You go out, man.